We'll go to the next case in the morning.
Cheers.
Sawyer versus Insurance. Mr. Keogh.
Your Honors, Counsel, may it please the Court. Mr. Sawyer raised two issues on his appeal. The first issue has already been dealt with by this Court in Perry versus First National Bank, which was whether there still was a prior right of action under Section 1681M of the Fair Credit Reporting Act. Perry answered that in the negative. The remaining issue before this Court in this case is whether FACTA should be applied retroactively to bar the portions of Mr. Sawyer's cause of action and the putative class action's cause of actions that arose prior to the effective date of December 1, 2004. We contend that FACTA should not be applied retroactively. Several courts, I think there's about nine or so now, have dealt with this issue. We cited some of those in our brief, which is Bonner versus Home 123 Corp., Murray versus Sunrise, on Chevrolet, Murray versus Singular Wireless, Phillips versus New Century, Shellman versus Capital One Bank, which I don't believe was cited, but it's from the Northern District of Indiana, Hogan and Fisher. Many of these courts and the ones outside this district did a detailed analysis under Landgraf versus USI Film Products. And in doing that analysis, they looked at the standard set forth in Landgraf, which was adopted by the Seventh Circuit in Reyes versus Immigration Naturalization Services. And the courts under Landgraf should look at a statute to see, one, does the statute state whether it's going to be applied retroactively or not? And if it's silent on that issue, it then looks to see whether, if you apply the statute retroactively, are you going to diminish a substantive right of the affected class? Now, the courts, I just cited, and ones we cited in the brief, all examined these issues. They looked at FACTA and noted that FACTA was silent on the issue of whether it should be applied retroactively.
No, if you apply it retroactively, where does it back up to? Meaning, what is retroactive?
Well, there's, I guess, two propositions put forth by defendant. The first one
what?
Is you
say that again.
Two propositions put forth by defendant on how to apply it retroactively. One is to take it from December 1st, 2004, the effective date, and run it backwards. Or two, they argue that the enactment date of the statute, which is the year before of December of 2003, should be when it should be applied, which to us doesn't make a lot of sense because what's the point of having the effective date if the enactment date is the date that the act is effective?
Well, take the effective date then as it applies to your client.
Then in that case, it'd be any cause of action that accrued prior to December 1st, 2004.
And what would that accrual incident be?
The accrual incident, well, this case is the example is Mr. Sawyer applied for insurance on October 31st, 2004. At that date, he was offered a higher insurance rate based upon the information in his credit report.
On the same date he applied?
Correct. They did not send a letter notifying him of the adverse action. Now, on that date, he actually signed up for insurance. He incurred a debt to pay the debt, the policy, which he actually paid in December after the effective date. But even if he never signed up with the insurance, he has a cause of action under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. The Act specifically provides that if someone's denied insurance or denied a loan, those are instances when no money exchanges hands, they have a cause of action.
That's not what's alleged here, though. It's alleged that he overpaid.
Correct.
And if the overpayment occurred after the effective date of the Act, then whether or not it applies retroactively makes no difference.
Well, Your Honor,
nothing in your complaint about when he paid.
No, the complaint is silent on the issue completely. If you recall, this motion was granted at the presentment.
Right.
We didn't brief the issue or develop much facts in this case.
Right.
But
you've just told us, though, that he paid after the effective date of the Act.
Correct. But he incurred the obligation to pay.
So even if we were to send it back for fact-finding on that, you're going to lose?
Well, Your Honor, I think the issue is when does he incur the debt? When is the date? When is he obligated to pay it, which is when he signed up?
That doesn't – when you apply for insurance, that doesn't mean you have to agree to pay for it. You don't pay for it until the policy is issued.
Right. He applied, though, and after applying, he then did signed up prior to the effective date. He didn't pay until afterwards.
What do you mean he signed up?
He agreed to take insurance. They sent him – the invoice with the insurance binder, I think in November. And then you know, you can pay by December, whatever it was, and he paid by the date they gave him.
You're saying he was covered.
He bound the policy.
No, I think the date didn't start until December. But it's important to note that he brought claims for statutory and punitive damages under 1681M. So even if he doesn't have any actual damages, he still has a cause of action for the adverse action.
Still looking at the accrual date myself. I mean, Judge Sykes is focusing on one issue, is when he actually paid something. That's sort of the final act. The question I guess I would have, is there something before then that designates accrual, that this everything is in place? I guess what you would be saying is that they abused or used without giving notice of an adversity the assessment for his what do they call the thing?
The adverse action letter?
No. The what he got, he got some kind of a report on credit, a credit report. What do you call it?
The credit report.
Credit report. Okay.
I think
there's not a generic name. All right, you got a credit report, and in that credit report was information that was inaccurate, apparently.
Correct.
And they used it.
Correct.
In assessing, at least the way you allege it. So the question I would have is, when did they use it and impact your client?
They used it in October 2004. That's when it did the analysis based upon the credit report and figured out his rate would be higher than the customary rate charged. That's when it accrued. When they failed to send him the letter, would probably be the last instant when they failed to send that letter, shortly thereafter is when his cause of action accrued.
How can it accrue before he actually makes the overpayment? He hasn't sustained any damage until he actually makes the overpayment.
Well, Your Honor, I think this court addressed that issue in Murray in a fair credit case, and the court, I'll just quote it, says that actual loss is small and hard to quantify is why statutes such as the Fair Credit Reporting Act provide for modest damages without proof of actual damages. He was giving a higher rate, and whether he paid it or not prior to the effective date, based on when they told him he could pay it, is somewhat irrelevant as far as whether his claim survives, because he still can get statutory and punitive damages under the Act.
But that doesn't speak to the date of accrual, which is what we're talking about here. The fact that he might be able to get nominal damages and punitives doesn't speak to when the claim accrued. And if the claim accrued when he made his payment, which occurred after the effective date of the Act, then we don't have a retroactivity question here.
Your Honor, I don't think under the Act payments require law. The Act specifically provides for failure to send adverse action when someone's denied a loan or someone doesn't in Treadway, the application was never even submitted. No payment even changed hand. That's Treadway versus Chevrolet, a Seventh Circuit case. In that case, the dealership didn't even send the loan application. He was just denied outright. No money exchanged hands, and that was a cause of action under the Fair Credit Reporting Act. So payment is not a requirement of the Act.
Once you've gotten notice of the adverse use, or whatever you call it, should that something where he says he gets notice, whatever, the same day, you're accepted, but your credit report indicates that you didn't do this, that, and the other thing, therefore your premium's higher? I mean, is that what you would expect to get?
As soon as possible, Your Honor, yes.
What's that mean?
That if they're going to charge him a rate based on his credit report, they have an obligation under the Act to notify him immediately.
At the same time?
At the same time, or if not, the next day. They need to notify him.
But I guess still looking at this floating accrual time, that's when the adverse action occurred, and without proper notice or something, or disclosure, then that's when your claim accrues. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, Your Honor. Failure to sign the adverse action was when it accrued. And not notifying him, signing him up for the insurance without notifying him. Well, and Mr. Sawyers is a perfect example. He had erroneous information. He subsequently had it removed, and then when he reapplied years later, his rate jumped, is decreased by a couple hundred dollars. So he's the perfect example of why that's required.
What do you say, after he corrected it? Because they used the same one? Or what? How did a couple years later
go up? Well, in this case, they used the same one. He then applied online as a new customer, and they pulled a new report with the erroneous information removed. And then he was given a $200 lower rate than he was given.
Lower?
Yes. So he would have saved money. And I'll reserve any remaining time for rebuttal.
Okay.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Go on.
A couple of things I want to just respond to that Mr. Keough said before I get into my argument. One is he made various references to the things that occurred in November 2004 before the effective date of FACTA. I just want to point out for the record to the court that there's nothing in the complaint or anywhere in the briefing about anything that occurred in November 2004. The record established in the district court through the pleadings was that he applied in October, the policy issued in December, and you've heard them concede that it was paid for in December. We believe, Judge Sykes, that you're correct, that that's when the claim would have accrued. That's logical. That's consistent with the way the claims accrual is treated in tort claims across the board.
What you're saying is, other than the fact that they've alleged that he applied at this point, there's nothing in between the time of applying and paying. No facts are established about what sequenced after that. He recited some things. You say they're not in the complaint?
They're not in the complaint, Your Honor. All that the complaint says is that he applied in October and that the policy he decided to purchase issued in December. And
depending on whether payment or not, but does this have to go back to fill in those blanks?
I don't think so, Your Honor, both because I believe that the tenor of the questions that Judge Sykes was asking about accrual is correct, that he has no claim until he is actually paid in light of the fact that what he is seeking here is a return of, among other things, actual damages resulting from his overpayment. As Judge Bauer has written in other cases under the Fair Credit Reporting Act, the FCRA is not a strict liability statute. There must be some kind of tangible damage or harm associated with the conduct of which the person is complaining. And here he's complaining of overpayment. That didn't occur until December 2004. But quite apart from that, we think that if you look at the Fair Credit Reporting Act and FACTA, which I'm going to just use the acronym because the words are just too many words to string together with any confidence that I could say them correctly. But if you look at the Fair Credit Reporting Act and FACTA and what those two statutes together do and don't do, we believe that you don't even need to get to the question of whether October or December 2004 is the relevant date, because we believe that on the face of the statute, the relevant date for determining when private claims were cut off by FACTA is the enactment date of the statute. And to understand that, you need to look at what is the primary conduct regulated by FACTA and by the Fair Credit Reporting Act, and that is the issuance and use of credit in business decisions that affect consumers. And the primary conduct that is regulated by the Fair Credit Reporting Act was not materially affected by FACTA. Companies like Esurance and companies like the defendant or the appellee in the case that's going to follow have the same general obligations to concerning their use of consumer credit information and concerning their obligations to provide reports to consumers. The only thing that the FACTA did was to change the remedies associated with alleged violations of those statutes from private claims to public enforcement. And when you look at Section 312F of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, what you see is language that we think is clear and unambiguous about the temporal scope of the statute. That provision says that rights and claims existing as of December 2003, the enactment date of the statute, are not affected. We believe the obvious corollary to that is that claims accruing or arising after December 3, 2003 are affected. Because if that's not what that provision means, then that provision is either surplusage or, it's even worse than that, it could be misleading surplusage. Because
how do we square that, though, with the statutory directive that the agency should promulgate an effective date? And then it did so sometime in the future, December 1st of 2004.
I think more logically, the effective date provisions should be understood to apply to the changes in the regulatory regime that companies like Esurance or the appellee in the case that follows were required to live by under FACTA. Although the provision that we've been arguing about or discussing today is the private right of action provision, another thing that FACTA did was to establish streamlined and clearer guidance for companies that issue and use credit in their business-making decisions. and directed the regulators to establish a regulatory regime that would help clarify and improve the quality of the information given to customers. It makes sense in that context that the effective date would come later, because it would take time for the regulators to build the regulations, to take public comment on them, to promulgate them, and then in turn for companies like Esurance or the Appley in the case that follows to adjust their systems to comply with those new regulations.
Are you saying then that until December 1st that Esurance wouldn't be obligated to adjust its system?
Well, we say that December 1st, 2003, the enactment date of the statute.
Well, I'm talking about when all this is said and done on what you were just saying, the regulation.
No, what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that the December 1st, 2004 date, to us more logically, is the date by which companies like Esurance or other issuers of credit were required to have the systems in place and to be in compliance with the new regulations that were enacted by the Federal Trade Commission.
That's what I just said. So it would seem that you would be saying that before that time, you're really not obligated to tell someone you used as...
No, that's not right, Your Honor. The obligations would be essentially the new regulations are not... that didn't create something where nothing existed before. That simply streamlined and improved the clarity of the obligations on companies using and issuing credit in terms of what information has to go to consumers when they are issuing, when they're making a business decision that affects a consumer based in part on their credit.
When do you have to tell them that the credit report influenced the decision? When did that start?
That was there for a long time. Yes, that was prior to that. That's been in the Fair Credit Reporting Act prior to the enactment of.
That's not new.
No, that's not a new obligation, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, in terms of analyzing whether or not this is a retroactive application of the statute, we think that the Landgraf opinion, which you heard Mr. Keough mention during his argument, answers the question clearly and convincingly in favor of the appellees in three different places. First, looking at Mr. Keough's opening brief, where they quoted some length from Landgraf to support their position that this is an improper retroactive opinion. In fact, the quote they cite supports our position. This is page 11 of their brief, and it's page 280 of the Landgraf opinion. And there, the Supreme Court says that a retroactivity analysis only applies if the statute relates to conduct occurring or to acts that happen prior to the enactment of a statute. Now, here, we don't have any acts, according to the complaint, that occurred prior to the enactment of the statute. And so we're not talking about changing the legal significance of conduct prior to the enactment of the statute. All that we are talking about is whether he is allowed to bring a private right of action or whether any complaints that he has about the receipt or the non-receipt of a notice he claims to be entitled to receive should be pursued through private enforcement. And there are two other places in Landgraf on page 273 of that decision where the court says things that we believe are again, favorable to our position. One is that the application of statutory changes concerning prospective relief for pre-enactment conduct is by definition not retroactive for purposes of conducting a retroactivity analysis. And the second thing is that procedural rules affecting secondary conduct and not primary conduct, and here, again, I would argue that the primary conduct regulated by the FCRA is the obligations on the issuers in the way that they use credit and the way that they notify consumers about their use of credit. That's the primary thing that the Fair Credit Reporting Act is addressing. And that the secondary conduct, what we're talking about here is secondary conduct, namely whether or not somebody has a private right of action or if they have a complaint about something, they need to take it to the Federal Trade Commission or the other appropriate agency. Now, one of the things that is sort of lurking in the briefing is that there's some sense on the appellant's side that really what's happened here is just it's awfully unfair because he had a claim and now he doesn't have a claim. Well, first of all, our position is that when you look at Section 312F of the statute, he never had a claim because unless 312F means what it says, claims arising after the enactment date of the statute in December 03, they were never allowed to be filed in court. But even if that's so, the fact of the matter is every time there's a change in the statute that reduces remedies or reduces claims or reduces rights, you can always make an argument of unfairness. In this case, we think that Congress clearly established when the private right of action bar took effect, and we believe that that's December 2003. Even if the court concludes that, in fact, that was the effective date of December 2004, here we believe Mr. Keough's client, Mr. Sawyer, doesn't have a claim because he didn't pay for anything. The thing of which he is complaining did not occur until December 2004 when he overpaid for his policy. Thank you very much.
Mr. Keough, how much time you got left here? Got 1 minute left.
Thank you. The thing that Mr. Sawyer is complaining of is the adverse action of being charged a higher insurance rate without being notified, which is the primary concern of the Fair Credit Reporting Act, is to make sure the information in consumer reports are correct. That's a primary consideration. Now, the Act deals with many things. For example, firm offers of credit must be clear and conspicuous. Well, there's no payment made on those offers. Those are sent to consumers. The receipt of those offers arise a cause of action, even though no payment has been made. I think the payment issue is a red herring, especially as the statute provides for statutory and punitive damages, which, as this court held in Murray, proof of actual damages is not needed. Now, the insurance's position that they had no obligations under FACTA until December 2004, but plaintiffs or Mr. Sawyer's cause of action got cut off the year before is a bit self-serving. The effective date was there for a reason. I think there was about 20 or 30 effective dates for different positions of FACTA, and there's reasons for those and as to so when liability occurs. I see my time is up, and thank you.
Okay. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.